bakery.
Okay. I will do my best to make sure we include everyone and myself, Representative Carr. So please let the record reflect we do have a quorum to conduct business. If we could ask members to please silence our cell phones, silence your cell phone. We appreciate that. We have Sophia Tenney, our committee secretary, and Johan Timmers from the Anchorage LIO. Thank you so much for your support. We just have one item on our agenda today, bycatch and Alaska fisheries, introductory informational presentations. Joining us today is Commissioner Doug Vincent Lang from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, Dave Witherall from the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council, and Glenn Merrill, the Assistant Regional Administrator, NOAA Fisheries Alaska Region. And there's just a couple brief comments I want to make as we get started. There's been a lot of interest in this topic in this meeting, and so I just want to set the stage for what's happening today. First, I just want folks to understand sort of why we're having the meeting and why we're having it right now and what we're doing today. So when I took over as chair of this committee, I asked all committee members if there were topics outside of legislative proposals that people were interested in having a meeting about. There were two topics that came up. One was the regulatory package related to in-stream water reservations, and the second was generally bycatch issues in Alaska. We held the first meeting back in July when we had a brief break from the multiple special sessions that we had this summer. And I want people to understand that during special sessions, we were prohibited from having meetings on these topics because they were not part of the special session call. And so this really has been our first opportunity to bring up issue number two. Once the November 2nd, end of the last special session happened and we learned that there would not be a fifth special session. So why we're having the meeting at the request of members, why we're having it now is timing-wise, this is the first opportunity that we've had to have this meeting, given that we've been in special session up until just a couple of weeks ago. And there's tremendous amount of interest. Today, we're hearing from the government agencies and management side of things. And in future meetings, we will hear from different stakeholder groups. It became pretty clear that we could not cover all of that in one meeting, given the number of members of this committee, the likelihood of a lot of questions. And so we want to split it up into two meetings. And so I want that to be clear as well. We didn't want to exclude anyone. And so we have, specifically organized today's meeting to be to hear from government agencies, and then a follow-up meeting will be from stakeholders. So I don't know if anybody has any comments or anything to get us started, but I just wanted to sort of set that context given the level of interest we've had in the topic. With that, Commissioner Vincent Lang, the floor is yours.
Is this on?
Thank you. Yes.
Well, good morning. For the record, my name is Doug Vincent Lang, and I'm privileged to be the Commissioner of the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. Thank you for the invitation to have a conversation with you this morning regarding bycatch. The gentleman with me will be covering the broader issues of topics of bycatch in our federal water fisheries, including halibut and crab. I chose not to present on that as they will cover it adequately, and I did not want to be duplicative. This said, I will be happy to answer any questions you may have regarding their presentations at the end. Instead, I'm going to focus on a pressing management issue facing our state. What happened to Western Alaska chum sand this year? Bycatch is being identified as a culprit of the low returns. So is this the case, or simply a piece of a puzzle that we must piece together to see the entire picture of what happened? Seeing the complete picture allows us to focus our management and research efforts on what will make the biggest difference. As we all know, Western Alaska chum salmon returns were extremely poor this year. As a result, we closed in-river and coastal fisheries, including those for subsistence. Under our Constitution and state statutes, all salmon stocks must be managed for their sustained yield and benefits. When we find ourselves in a situation where there are not enough returning fish for the spawning grounds to ensure future generations of salmon, we are bound to restrict or close fisheries. It is important to place this year's poor returns in perspective and understand that salmon productivity is generally cyclical and that we have seen low returns in the past. Yes, these are some of the lowest returns on record, but we have seen low returns before and have recovered from them. Chum and Chinook salmon AYK crashed in the 1990s and rebounded in the early to mid-2000s. This said, let me begin by clearly stating that the state is extremely concerned about the low returns of salmon to much of Western Alaska this past summer. We understand the importance of salmon to local communities from a food security, cultural, and economic perspective. The AYK region has nearly 50,000 rural residents in more than 100 different communities. Subsistence and commercial fisheries are vitally important. The cash many residents gain through commercial fishing frequently offsets the increasing cost of fuel, boats, and other gear needed to subsistence hunt and fish. We empathize with the situation and understand the hardships. I made a trip this summer to several impacted communities along the Yukon at the invitation of Canada Chiefs Conference Chief Simon. The words of distress spoken were insightful and impactful to me. While we understand that nothing can replace traditional subsistence fishing, the governor's office and ADF&G were responsive and continue to do so. We are taking steps to mitigate some of these impacts. The administration distributed salmon to impacted communities this fall and is considering additional distributions to address food shortage issues. Again, while we recognize that nothing can replace the ability to participate in traditional subsistence activities, we are hoping that these fish will at least partially offset some of the lost food. We are also extending hunting seasons where possible and where it does not impact the long-term sustainability of resources. I have directed my staff to explore additional opportunities that are available. So what happened to Western Alaska chum? We are assessing the reasons, including bycatch, behind the poor returns, to better understand the root causes and what can be done from a management perspective. Bottom line, we are missing somewhere in the order of 1.5 to 2 million chum salmon from a preseason projection for the Yukon River summer and fall chum runs. So where did these fish go? Well, many think it's bycatch. So let's first look at the trawl bycatch in the Bering Sea. Many people that think that this is a likely culprit, as we know that some chum salmon are caught as bycatch in the trawl fisheries that target pollock and cod. Most of the chum salmon incidentally caught are not adults. Rather, they are juvenile fish that will return in out years. So it's more appropriate and accurate to look at what was caught 2 years ago as bycatch, as these are the fish that would have returned as adults this year. 2 years ago, trawlers caught about 350,000 juvenile chum salmon. While this number is big, and yes, we should take steps to reduce it, what do we know about the origins of these fish? From our genetic work, we know about 16% of these are of Western Alaska origin, or about 60,000 chums. Again, these are subadults and will spend another couple of years in the ocean suffering natural mortality. So in terms of numbers returning this year, somewhere around 25,000 to 35,000 adult chum salmon would have returned to Western Alaska rivers if none were caught as bycatch. While large, and again, we should take steps to reduce it, it alone does not explain the 1.5 to 2 million gap. So were they caught in other fisheries? One place they could be caught would be fisheries outside the United States. We know Russian trawlers catch salmon, but we do not know how many or what the origin of the caught salmon are, as most do not have neutral observers on board their vessels. As a member of the North Pacific Fishery Management Council, we have written a letter to the Secretary of State asking them to work with us to get a better catch accounting and genetic analyses of Russian salmon bycatch. But again, assuming the numbers are close to the Alaskan numbers, we do not think this alone explains what happened. This said, we'll work with the State Department to ensure we get accurate numbers from these fisheries. Western Alaska chum salmon could also be caught in mixed stock salmon fisheries in state waters. One such fishery is that which occurs along the Alaska Peninsula. From past work, we know that Western Alaska chum salmon are caught in Alaska Peninsula fisheries. This year, about 2.2 million chums were harvested in these fisheries. We know from past genetic work that about 30% or 600,000 of these are of Western Alaska origin. Of these, about half are of Bristol Bay origin, leaving about 300,000 that are likely of Yukon, Kuskokwim, and Norton Sound origin. We also know that most of the harvested Western Alaskan chums occurs during the June portion of this fishery. Again, at that level, this alone does not completely explain what happened. To recall, we are missing between 1.5 and 2 million chums for the Yukon alone. I must point out that these estimates are based on data collected during years of relatively high summer chum abundance in Western Alaska. As a result,
Commissioner, pardon me for interrupting. Just a brief at ease. For folks listening in, I was alerted that some folks are having trouble hearing, and it's really loud and clear in the room here. So what we've done is unmute on the team, so please minimize any background noise if possible. And then there's also the option of going to the Gavel to Gavel website. It's coming through pretty good on the Gavel to Gavel website. There'll be a slight delay relative to the room, but that's another option. Okay, let's continue.
So I think it was that. I must point out that the estimates that we've derived for the Alaskan Peninsula fisheries are based on data collected during years of relatively high summer chum abundance in western Alaska. As a result, while it represents the best available information at this time, the old WASEP study, it may overestimate the proportional harvest of western Alaska stocks, given that incidental harvest is generally related to abundance. This reasoning is substantiated in that Alaska Peninsula fisheries do not harvest fall-run chum salmon, which also performed poorly this year. I have requested my staff to put together a study proposal updating the genetic composition information for the Alaska Peninsula fisheries during the month of June. This said, I have also directed my staff to explore options for what I could do this summer using my EO authority to reduce intercept of western Alaska summer chum salmon during June if we again experience low chum returns and subsistence fishing is restricted or closed. Additionally, the board will be discussing these fisheries during our next cycle. So what is happening to our chums in the ocean? It appears that something is happening to them because we can't explain the missing 1.5 to 2 million chums with their intercept or bycatch fisheries issues. Several years ago, we began exploring marine survival and how changing marine conditions are impacting the returns of salmon to western Alaska streams. We have a multi-agency study underway that is contributing to our understanding of factors driving survival and productivity at different life stages for western Alaska Chinook and chum salmon. These studies are providing clues about what may be happening in the ocean and are providing forecasting tools used in the management of western Alaska fisheries. Our preliminary findings indicate that the first several months in the marine environment may be critical. We are exploring options to expand this work into other areas of the Bering Sea, especially the southern Bering Sea and the Gulf of Alaska. We are also participating in various deep blue ocean surveys to better understand marine survival in the open ocean. We have directed funds from the Pacific Salmon Commission and the North Pacific Research Board towards this effort and have staff assigned research cruises. We have also been actively communicating with our congressional delegations on ways to secure more support for these work efforts. Finally, we will be convening a governor stakeholder task force to identify and understand the variables affecting the return of salmon, including bycatch, and what can be done in terms of research and management. This will involve fitting the puzzle pieces together to form a picture of the current situation from which we can develop a cross-jurisdictional management strategy. We'll be inviting representatives of impacted communities, fisheries, and management agencies. It is our goal to hold these meetings this winter and spring. In closing, we sympathize with those impacted by the low salmon returns we have experienced this summer. We are committed to finding the causes and taking the appropriate management actions to address them. We will work with the appropriate management entities to cooperate on needed research and to address causal issues. We will be collecting new information as part of an expanded science initiative. And finally, we will be convening a stakeholder panel this spring and winter to gather input. Thank you for the opportunity to talk.
Thank you, Commissioner. Appreciate that. And sorry if I didn't make it clear. Commissioner Vincent Lang was speaking from his notes. There wasn't a PowerPoint presentation to go along with his presentation. So I'm imagining there are questions. I'll start with Speaker Stoop here in the room, and then I'll just go to each member if that would work okay with folks. Speaker Stoop.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a couple of questions, if I might ask them. I know that the state manages all salmon fisheries, but the council manages salmon bycatch in the federal groundfish fisheries. So how does the state share information or have a role with the council?
So the state has a voting membership on the North Pacific Fish Management Council, and we participate in the management planning activities for federal water fisheries, including those for bycatch. And I note that through that effort, especially with Chinook salmon, we've made substantial progress in reducing Chinook salmon bycatch out in the open ocean by setting hard caps that are indexed to the escapement projected escaping ranges for Western Alaska streams.
Could I, may I have a question? Mm-hmm. So along that line, so what kind of system or hard caps are set up to limit salmon bycatch in the Bering Sea or in and or the Gulf of Alaska?
So in the Bering Sea, we have hard caps set that are dependent upon what we're projecting to have salmon returns to the three river systems in Western Alaska. And as a result, I think you'll see in later presentations that the Chinook salmon bycatch has actually gone down over time. With chump salmon, there isn't a hard cap. And part of the challenge we're facing, and I think you'll see that in some of these subsequent presentations, is that as we move the trawl fleet around in terms of management for halibut and crab bycatch and Chinook salmon bycatch, there's only so much ocean out there, and sometimes we have collateral impacts on chum salmon. Right now we're seeing chum salmon bycatch numbers increasing. So the Bering Sea is a dynamic system that's already managed on a latitude, longitude basis for ground, for bycatch. It's also managed on a depth basis for bycatch and a temporal basis. So whenever you do an effort on that X, Y, Z and temporal time frame and you move the fleet around to reduce the bycatch of one species, you end up having impacts on other species.
Thank you.
So it's very important that as we make any corrective action out in the Bering Sea that we take time to figure out what's going to be the impact on other species if you try to reduce the harvest on one species.
Madam Chair, if you would indulge me for my last question.
Sure.
I would appreciate it. So I know that there's a lot of questions insofar as climate change or ocean acidification and how that's affecting things. Can you tell me what questions are involved that the research is focusing on?
So we've come to the conclusion that ocean survival is having an impact on salmon returns across the state of Alaska. And we have control over spawning numbers and what's going in the river and the harvest of those on. But we don't really have a good understanding of what's happening in the near shore environment after they leave the freshwater systems, nor what's happening in the deep blue ocean. So we've focused some energy at that. We've now hired a scientist to look only at marine survival conditions affecting salmon. That's Dr. Katie Howard. We have her working on near shore survival, factors affecting near shore survival of chum and Chinook salmon as they immigrate out of the Yukon River right now. And we're seeing some very promising results out of that work. We're seeing that first month and a half out in the ocean really can have a dramatic impact on the long-term, the return of those fishing out years. So we put together a couple of proposals that we're working with the congressional delegation to potentially expand that work into the southern Bering Sea and into the Gulf of Alaska. We also know that nearshore survival is only one piece of that. The deep blue ocean is another. We really do not have a very good understanding of what's happening out in the deep blue ocean. But that we also recognize that we can't do that alone. That's going to have to take some work with other entities. So part of the other job that I have is I also sit on the North Pacific Research Board, and I also sit on the Pacific Salmon Commission. We've now dedicated some money to doing work in the open ocean, some of the work with Russia, Canada, and the United States that's looking at the transects from the Vancouver all the way over to Russia. And we've actually dedicated staff time to start getting a better understanding of what's happening in terms of movements, distribution, and condition of salmon out in the open ocean. And hopefully that'll start fitting the puzzle pieces together, what's happening out in the ocean.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Speaker Stoops. Next, Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner, for your testimony today on this important topic. You mentioned in your testimony that the estimates were there were 350,000 salmon that were, some salmon that were caught, well, 2 years ago through bycatch. What do you base that number on, and how accurate do you think that number is?
That number is based on observer coverage for the trawl industry in the Bering Sea. Most of those vessels, all the vessels, 100% coverage has observer coverage on it. I think we're fairly confident of that number. The genetic information is collected from the observer program and then is actually calculated by the federal government and the National Marine Fisheries Service's Science Center. So, I'm fairly confident of what that number is and what the genetic composition of those catches are. I'm less confident what may be caught across the international dateline and the U.S.-Russian border. And that's why we've written a letter to the Secretary of State urging greater observer coverage on the Russian fleet and collection of information to identify what the stock composition of those fish are.
Thank you. Follow-up question, Madam Chair?
Sure. Go ahead.
I can appreciate, Commissioner, how you would be less confident in those numbers that are happening through international fisheries. What information do we have now to base those estimates on? In other words, is there an observer program that takes place amongst the Russian fleet? Or do you know the answer to the question? Go ahead.
I missed that question. I'm sorry.
Representative Ortiz, you were breaking up just a little bit. If you could repeat your question.
Are you aware of, Commissioner, is there an observer program that exists within the Russian fleet of trawlers?
They have very spotty coverage on the Russian side of the border. We don't really have very accurate estimates in my eyes of what's being caught nor the composition of what those catches are.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Ortiz. Let's see if Representative McCabe has any questions.
Thanks, Chair Tarr. I guess I don't have too many questions. I'm here to learn, as much as I can about this, because obviously I'm not a fisherman, although I do have a number of relatives that are Bristol Bay fishermen and who sort of feed me some of the information that I've gotten. I guess I'd like to know, Commissioner, you talk about a cap a little bit, the bycatch cap or cap or reliever. Those individual boat quotas, is that IBQs or is that a global cap for everyone?
It is a global cap for everyone. And there are forces the industry to kind of work together as that fishery is fully rationalized out in the Bering Sea in terms of both pollock and cod now. And we think that that's making a difference in terms of reducing the bycatch release of schnooks. And we're below the caps, I think, annually on what's been harvested for schnook salmon.
Okay. I'm curious, maybe you could expound on that a little bit. Why wouldn't a global cap like that allow bad actors to increase the number and bring it right up to the top instead of having an individual boat quota where we could determine which operators are actually attempting to reduce their bycatch, and we could also find the observers that are maybe not doing their job as diligently as they should? I guess that's maybe just a statement. You don't have to really postulate on that. I just wondered about the difference between individual boat quotas and global, and why we've decided to go with global. And for instance, Canada has done individual boat quotas and seen their bycatch decrease significantly.
So, Representative McCabe, I think maybe I will let the other two speakers give their presentations, and if that hasn't answered your question, I'd be glad to address it after you've heard from those two speakers.
Okay. That's all for me, Chair Tarr. Thank you.
Okay, great. Thank you. Let's go to Representative Vance.
Thank you, Chair Tarr. Commissioner, you've just spoken about salmon bycatch, but the upcoming action in front of the North Pacific Fishery Management Council is regarding halibut bycatch. Do you have a position from the state's perspective on the bycatch in the Bering Sea?
Representative Vance, we are going into a council meeting. We are reviewing all the materials at this present time. We don't have a position yet as to what we're going to do. We are going to take a step, though, to have a significant reduction in halibut bycatch, but which alternative, it would be premature for me to postulate that we'll ultimately support that we're done reading all the materials in advance of that meeting.
Okay, do you have an additional question, Chair Tarr?
Yes, sure. Of course, go ahead.
I just want to make sure, Commissioner, that I heard you correctly, that when you were talking about the chums that you are still trying to find an explanation for the missing 1.5 million chums, but then you also stated at another time that there's no hard cap on chum bycatch. Did I hear that correctly?
That's correct.
So do you believe that there's a correlation between not having a hard cap on bycatch and the unexplained reduction in the 1.5 million chum and the bearing?
Well, when you start piecing those puzzles together like we did through that discussion that I just had with the committee, we don't think that bycatch alone is the culprit that's causing the reduction, that's causing the run failures in the Yukon and Kuskokwim River. That said, we should take steps, and we are exploring steps as to what we can do to reduce bycatch of chum in the Bering Sea trawl fishery. But we don't think that alone will solve the issue or is the culprit of the issue. So.
Thank you, Commissioner. I think that's a pretty fair assessment, but I do look forward to having a follow-up in the future of the management plan overall, and I think Alaskans are looking forward to that as well.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Vance. Let's go to Representative Christ-Tompkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A follow-up to Rep. Vance's question. Commissioner, if I understood your answer correctly, that it sounds like the state of Alaska is still formulating its position on the four alternatives relating to trawl bycatch in the Bering Sea in the December meeting and does not yet have a position. And I just wanted to confirm that's the case. And then I guess as sort of a follow-up to that, ask what information does the state need to take a position that it doesn't currently have?
Well, again, the documents that are coming to us in terms of making the final decision of this meeting are vast and large, and we're pouring through them as we look at them. Again, we are going to take a step at this meeting to reduce bycatch of halibut in the Bering Sea trawl fisheries. We're committed to that and moving forward. Which of those alternatives becomes a little bit more complex that we end up supporting? You know, there's pluses and minuses to all of those alternatives. And again, we're looking through the analysis and trying to decide the proper path forward.
And would it be a follow-up, Madam Chair?
Of course.
Thank you. And Commissioner, would it be possible to, I mean, without pigeonholing yourself into any of the alternatives, I assume we're mostly talking about alternatives 2, 3, and 4, since alternative 1, as I understand it, is status quo, which would not be a reduction in halibut trawl bycatch. What are some of the pluses and minuses that you and the department are evaluating?
Well, one of the clear issues that we're trying to sort our way through is how we link the abundance of halibut to a cap on bycatch. Do we use a model that's done by the International Pacific Halibut Commission, which has 3 Canadians voting on it, and really the bycatch issue is a U.S. domestic allocation issue as to how it's done versus how it's done internationally? Or do we link it to a more broader tiered level system and incentivize industry to reduce it? So we're looking at those questions right now. We're having discussions internally about which of those two approaches are best. But again, at the end of the day, you know, U.S. domestic allocation issues should remain in the U.S., in my opinion. So we're taking a very careful look at how we want to index the halibut abundance, whether that's indexed to an international model or to a broader level that is less tiered to outside influence.
Thank you. And one final follow-up, Madam Chair.
Sure.
Thank you. And Commissioner, on the subject of chum bycatch, Do you or does the state of Alaska believe that the council should put in places, a cap on the amount of chum bycatch taken by the trawl fleet in the Bering Sea?
I think that is something the council should look at. But again, I don't think we should just do it without giving some great thought as to what other implications that may cause. So, for instance, I don't want to just put a hard chum bycatch limit on and inadvertently increase the schnook salmon bycatch because they're both in big water trawls. So I'm not necessarily opposed to a chum salmon catch, but I think at the end of the day, we need to do a little bit of analysis so that we do it thoughtfully and we don't have unintended consequences moving forward.
Thank you.
Representative Story.
Thank you, Chair Tarr, and thank you for your presentation today, Commissioner. You've talked a little bit about incentives to the industry, and I've heard that has been successful in other countries. Can you tell me a little bit more about incentives to industry and how they work?
Well, industry will, if there's incentives to stay under the cap rather than fall, if you incentivize them to stay below the cap rather than penalize them for going above the cap, they stay below caps. I'm trying to think of a good analogy, but they have, through incentive programs, we have reduced the bycatch of halibut below the mandated hard caps. And without an incentive program, you probably would be fishing up to the cap. So at the end of the day, we see incentive programs as a way to keep us below hard caps that are set in moving forward. And industry, it incentivizes industry to look for ways to keep their bycatch low. The other thing is in the Bering Sea, we have rationalized fisheries, which in essence means that we've allowed the fishery to operate over a longer time period. That allows them to incentivize how they fish to reduce their bycatch on the ocean. So if you're not in a rush for fish, there's no incentive to reduce your bycatch if you're trying to catch all your pollock in a 2 or 3 week period of time. If you have that over 6 months, you have more incentive to move around to try to reduce bycatch in the open ocean. So we found incentive programs to be very effective at reducing bycatch levels, especially when they're combined with rationalized fisheries. In this last council meeting, a month and a half ago now, we rationalized the cod fishery in the Bering Sea, which we think is going to reduce the bycatch of halibut by about 25% moving forward.
I'll follow up.
Sure.
I hear you saying that is one of the options that you are looking at. I know you're saying that you're trying to find out the reasons for the delay in return of chum, and it does sound like there's many moving pieces to it, and this might be part. It sounds like it's been successful. Why is this not? Something that can be done as quickly as possible?
Again, Representative, sorry, I think we should do something on chum salmon bycatch out there. I said that in my testimony. But I think we need to not just rush into it. I think we need to look at it carefully and evaluate what the implications of that cap may be, because I certainly don't want to put a hard cap on chum that increases shrimp salmon bycatch and cause those problems. So I think we want to have an analysis that goes with it to ensure that we don't have unintended consequences on other areas of bycatch. And this same thing happens right now. There's a desire by some of the crab fishermen to expand the crab bycatch protection area on the bottom. Well, do we do that as an emergency, knowing that at the end of the day, that just may push the trawl industry further north into halibut grounds? I think we want to have a very good understanding of what we're doing before we
we take that action. And that doesn't mean we shouldn't take an action. We just need to make sure that we understand what the consequences of that action are on other species.
Any follow-up?
Thank you. No, thank you.
Okay. And we have question number two from Representative Stoops, then Ortiz, then McCabe. Representative Stoops.
Thank you very much. And excuse me. First, I just want to clarify that as opposed to the Russian 12 fleet, you said that all of the Alaskan waters require mandatory observer coverage, 100%. Is that correct?
That's correct. That's my understanding.
Okay. Thank you. And then I guess what do you see the legislature's role in helping the departments and the appropriate agencies determine why we're seeing a reduction in the Chinook and the Chum salmon? What would be your wish?
Well, funding to be able to start analyzing or start collecting information out in the open ocean. I think we've come to the conclusion that ocean survival is having impacts of salmon across both in the Gulf of Alaska and in the Bering Sea. We can control right now what's happening in freshwater environments, but we really don't understand the variables affecting the survival of fish in the ocean. So we're starting to piece that together, and hopefully as we move forward in time, they'll support our budget requests that deal with answering those questions.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Mm-hmm. Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As a follow-up to Representative Stoops' question, Commissioner, it was my understanding that while we have 100% observations taking place in either the Gulf or the Bering Sea, that one of those areas don't have 100% of coverage. Am I mistaken in that?
In the Bering Sea, I think we're 100% covered. For the trawl industry, we don't have coverage nearly as much on the longline fishery or the pot fisheries. But in the Bering Sea, the trawl fishery is 100% covered. I think that's what we're talking about. And again,
so
we're going to have more detail on that, Representative Ortiz, in the next two presentations.
Okay. Fair enough on that. Thank you. One more question, Madam Chair.
Sure.
Thank you. You spoke of while there's not a hard cap on the chum bycatch numbers, but there is a hard cap on the number. How does the hard cap work? In other words, once that number of Chinooks are caught that reach you, do you just shut down the trawl fleet at that point? At least in those particular areas, how is it really truly a hard cap?
Well, that's a federal fishery, so I'm going to let Mr. Merrill speak to that. It's my understanding that the fishery shuts down when that hard cap is reached.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative McCabe.
Thanks, Chair Tarr. Commissioner, so you talked about rationalized fisheries a little bit, and I think what I understand that is just instead of having a set opener like for a week or, you know, like the derby openers of years past, that this is sort of an extended time period allowing fishermen a little bit more time to properly manage their fishing and bycatch. Do I understand that correctly?
Well, rationalized fisheries occur when we award individual boats or processors or fishermen quotas based on their catch histories. And that allows them to be able to go out and fish over a longer duration, their proportional catch of that, of those fish species. So that allows them to hopefully fish not during times when there's high halibut abundance or high chum abundance on the ocean or in areas where that are in fish other areas, knowing that they're not in a rush to catch their quota in a competitive environment, rather to catch their individualized quotas over a longer duration of time.
Thanks. And follow up, Chair Tarr.
Sure.
So I guess that the rationalized fisheries is just the sort of the modern world, the word for IFQs, or the IFQs that we did years and years ago in Kodiak that were so controversial.
Well, there are different types of rationalized fisheries. There are co-op rationalized fisheries. There's IFQ fisheries. So yeah, there are. I think it's a term that applies to different kinds of fisheries that are basically prosecuted in a more orderly manner to hopefully increase market value of the fish that is coming out of it. And number two, that at the end of the day, increases safety of the fishermen that are out in the grounds, and hopefully at the end of the day, reduces bycatch.
Thanks for that. And one final question, Chair Tar.
Sure.
And maybe this isn't for you, Commissioner. Maybe it's for the next couple of presentations. But we keep talking about bycatch. Are we just assuming that all, because the trawl nets are soaked for 4+ hours, there's so much pressure on them? Are we assuming that all bycatch is the fish are dead, or is there some sort of percentage of mortality that we? That we know about or that we studied?
So we know some of those fish are not dead, and there's spec sorting that goes on to put a certain proportion of those fish back that are alive. There are some fish that are dead that are retained at the end of the day or not retained. But at the end of the day, what we're trying to do out there is incentivize industry to reduce their catch. And so when they have time to catch fish in a rationalized manner, they can do things like halibut excluders that basically reduce the numbers of halibut that are coming off the bottom of the ocean while they're trying to catch pollock or cod. They can fish in areas that may have lower catch rates for pollock, but also have lower catch rates for halibut. But they have time to fish longer to basically be able to catch those fish. So at the end of the day, what we're trying to do is have the fishery operate in a more planned manner that, again, increases the safety of the fishermen fishing so they're not out there competing in bad weather environments, that they're trying to incentivize themselves to experiment with gear that reduces bycatch and hopefully fish in areas where there's not a high bycatch of salmon, crab, or halibut on the grounds.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rep. McCabe. Representative Price Thompson has another question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is switching over to the salmon returns and salmon bycatch issue. A bit of a technical and funding question, but you mentioned that there's research underway relating to ocean survival of salmon, and I was wondering if that research is being funded through the, I think I'm getting this right, Arctic Yukon Kuskokwim Sustainable Salmon Initiative, and if there's sufficient funding for that research and for that effort, from your perspective.
So we are currently evaluating the survival of chum and schnook salmon from the Yukon River in the North Bering Sea. And that's providing us important insights as to the importance of that first month and a half in the nearshore environment to the ultimate survival of both chum and chinook salmon. That's providing answers, and certainly we are funding that through those kinds of initiatives you're talking about. But we think there's a need to expand that work into the southern Bering in the area along the Bristol Bay areas, as well as the North Gulf of Alaska, too. Because we're also doing some work on pink salmon in southeast Alaska as nearshore work that gives us better ability to assess the survival of those fish in that nearshore area. So I think we're putting together study proposals that we're looking for federal funding to basically expand those surveys into those new areas and provide certainty for the funding in the North Bering Sea work. We are also recognizing that we need to have a better understanding of what's happening in the ocean, open ocean. And that is expensive and time-consuming work. It requires international cooperation. Again, the two boards I sit on, Pacific Salmon Commission, as well as the North Pacific Research Board is dedicating money towards understanding that. And one thing we can do is put staff time out on research vessels to start exploring and helping answer those questions out there. Unfortunately, it's not going to be quick answers, but if we don't start, we won't get there at all. So, again, having some additional funding sources, we hopefully Congress, we're working with our congressional delegation to find that money to basically continue that work moving forward.
And a follow-up, Madam Chair?
Sure.
And Commissioner, I was wondering if you could just comment broadly on your perspective and the state's perspective on habitat impacts and or habitat damage that may occur in the Bering Sea with benthic and bottom trawling, and perhaps further comment on how you see those habitat impacts and or habitat damage interacting with crab stocks and other species that rely on that habitat.
So I am going to defer an answer on that because I have not given that a great deal of thought, Representative, and I will speak to my staff and I promise I'll get back to you with an assessment on that. But I have not really dug down into that issue to be able to answer in a good manner right now.
Any additional follow-up, Representative Tompkins?
That's good for now. Thank you so much.
Yeah. And I'll get back to you. I will talk to my staff about that very issue, and we'll get some answers back to you.
Any additional questions for Commissioner Vincent Lang?
This is Representative Story.
Okay, go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Chair Tarr. Through the Chair, Commissioner, when you say that it's expensive having it's more than observers, it's the communication, it's many things, but can you give me an idea of what it will take it's expensive not taking care of this issue. So can you give me an idea of what you're talking about when you talk about the expense?
We're putting those proposals together as part of the governor's budget, which I guess will be released in mid-December. So you'll have those in mid-December.
Any follow-up, Rep. Story?
I guess through the chair, Commissioner, I guess I was thinking about not only our expense, but thinking with the federal delegation and
feel. So for the deep ocean surveys, I think the North Pacific Research Board has dedicated somewhere in the order of $400,000 to that effort. The Pacific Salmon Commission is looking at hundreds of thousands of dollars going to that effort. And I think the overall effort in the North Pacific Survey group is on the order of tens of millions of dollars to be able to understand what's beginning to happen. Basically, we have five different ships that are doing different quadrants of the ocean between Vancouver, British Columbia, and Russia, and doing stations up and down from 200 miles out further out into the international waters. So it's not cheap work, but it's important work to start piecing the puzzle together.
Yes, and I appreciated knowing those numbers because I feel those numbers are doable in the scope of budgets that we're looking at. So thank you.
And I just have one question. Oh, Representative Vance has a question. Her hand's up.
Thank you, Chair Tarr. I'd like to circle back around to the question of the rationalized fisheries. And I was wondering, Commissioner, have the rationalized trawl fisheries been successful at avoiding halibut bycatch?
Again, I think you will see those numbers in the presentations that follow mine. And if you have further additional questions after you hear the presentations by Glenn and Dave, I'll be glad.
glad to answer that. But I think you've seen significant reductions in halibut bycatch over the last decade.
Any follow-up?
I just look forward to seeing the evidence of that and also the future presentation. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else online? Commissioner, the one question I had was just in terms of the research we're doing now, you're able to do the genetics for the, you know, the fish that we're catching and, you know, trying to sort out where they came from. You know, how recently was that research technique incorporated into our efforts? And you know, sort of in the criminal justice world, for example, right, you know, using DNA as the gold standard, and I would just imagine that's answering some questions that we might not have previously been able to answer. And so, you know, when you do these other research, we'll always include the genetic profile to be able to figure out things.
So the genetic information for the bycatch and the trawl industry in federal waters is conducted by the federal government. That's ongoing. The information for the Alaska Peninsula is based on the WASIP study, which is now about 10 years old. And I've directed my staff to put together a research proposal of what it would do to update that information, given that we have differences in run composition in that fishery, to update that information at current times. And we'll have that put together shortly.
Okay. Thank you.
Because that's critical towards understanding how we would take management actions if the board were to take management actions to try to reduce the intercept of fisheries.
Thank you. Okay. Any other questions from members for Commissioner Vincent Lang? Okay.
I'd be willing to answer any questions after the next two presentations we have.
Okay. Ready. Perfect. Thank you so much for your time this morning and for waiting so we can see if there are additional questions. Next, we're going to go to Dave Witherall. He's the Executive Director of the North Pacific Fishery Management Council. Mr. Witherall, are you available? And I hope I am saying your name correctly.
Madam Chair, you are, and I am available, and I'll wait for the presentation to be loaded.
Yes, the presentation is loaded, and I am ready to change slides for you, so you just let me know when to go to the next slide.
Okay, thank you. Well, thank you for the opportunity to speak to you to manage the
Pardon me to jump in so quickly, but you're breaking up a little bit.
Okay, let me try that again.
Now we are not hearing you at all. And I don't know if that's because you're not talking.
Madam Chair, is my speaker working?
Now it is, yes.
Okay, great. Thank you. I'm competing against others in my fourth family. In my talk today, I'll provide you with a brief overview of the council and the council process, the federal definition of bycatch, bycatch data from the groundfish fisheries, additional details on bycatch management of salmon and halibut, and provide a short primer on how the public can be informed and involved in the council decision-making process. That's a lot to cover in a 20-minute presentation, and given the time that we have left, I'm going to walk through these slides very quickly. Next slide. The primary law for managing marine fisheries in the U.S. is the Magnuson-Stevens Act, which was originally adopted in 1976 and has been amended many times since then. The Act established the 200-mile limit known as the Exclusive Economic Zone, or EEZ. It also established national standards to guide the development of fishery management plans, and more importantly, established 8 regional fishery management councils to provide an opportunity for the affected public and fishermen to have a say in the conservation and management of fisheries in their region. Next slide. Here's a shorthand list of the 10 national standards. The council balances these objectives in developing the fishery management plans and regulations. For example, to meet National Standard 9 and reduce bycatch to the extent practicable, for example, the council must also ensure that optimum yield is obtained from each fishery in the U.S. fishing industry using the best scientific information available. It also needs to take into account the other national standards, including communities. Next slide. This slide shows how council members would be sitting around the table if we were meeting in person rather than by webcast as we've been doing for the last year and a half. There are 11 voting members consisting of four agency representatives, including the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, and you can see the picture of Doug Vincent Lang's designee, Rachel Baker, and her alternate, Carla Bush. There are also seven members appointed by the governors of Alaska and Washington. Alaska governor appoints five members and Washington two. There are also four voting members from federal agencies. As executive director, I sit at the table to ensure that the meetings run smoothly. I also oversee the secretariat staff of 15, including administrative assistants who facilitate the meeting and fishery analysts who prepare the discussion papers and economic and environmental assessment documents that are used by the council for decision making. Next slide, please. The council meets five times per year in conjunction with two of its advisory bodies, the Scientific and Statistical Committee that provides peer review of the scientific information used, and the Fishing Industry Advisory Panel that provides recommendations on policy. All meetings are public, and people can attend, provide testimony, or even listen to the proceedings as they are all webcast. Next slide, please. As you are receiving presentations today from Fish and Game, the Council, and National Marine Fisheries Service, I thought this slide would be helpful to help make it clear the role that each agency has in managing of specific fisheries. For the purposes of this talk, the Council developed the conservation and management measures for the groundfish fishery, which are approved by the Secretary of Commerce and implemented by NOAA Fisheries. The state manages many of the groundfish fisheries in state waters. Next slide, please. Okay, with this background, we can discuss what bycatch actually is. The Magnuson-Stevens Act defines bycatch as those fish that are not retained. In other words, bycatch is discarded fish. And fish are discarded for two reasons. Either they are not economically marketable, or regulations prohibit fishermen from keeping fish. And if you think of economic discards, they might be fish like sculpins or grenadiers, or fish that are not able to be sold. And regulatory discards, if you think of them as ones that are outside of the regulated size limit or are prohibited from retention. Now, one special type of regulatory discard is prohibited species catch, or PSC. PSC species are those valuable species that are targeted at other fisheries and include halibut, salmon, and crabs. Next slide, please. So how much bycatch occurs in federal fisheries? In this slide, I've split out the data by area and gear type, with figures showing catch and discard by trawl gear on the left half and catch and discard by fixed gear on the right half. The upper graph shows the Bering Sea and Aleutian Islands, and the bottom graph shows the Gulf of Alaska data. Overall, you can see that the vast majority of fish are retained, and only a small proportion of the catch is discarded. Trawl fisheries can be characterized by higher catch volume with relatively low bycatch rates. And if you look at, compare the y-axes on all of these graphs, you can see the relative amounts of fish that are harvested by trawl gear versus fixed gear. Fixed gear, the long line of pod gear, has lower catches all overall, but with higher bycatch rates. And you'll also notice that overall catch is down in the Gulf of Alaska with the decline of the Pacific cod stock that resulted from the warm water blob that persisted from 2014 through 2016. So there's a lot of information on this slide, Madam Chair. Next slide, please.
Chair Tarr?
Yes. Yes, Representative McCabe.
Sorry, can you ask to hold questions to the end or ask as the slides go by?
Mr. Witherall, what would you prefer?
Thank you, Madam Chair, for the question. I think we get hung up on questions, so it might be easier to walk through all the slides and then come back for questions.
Okay, if that's okay with you, Rep. McCabe, I'll have you first on the list.
Okay.
Okay, please.
And Mr. Merrill will probably answer many of these questions in his presentation, so you might want to go through both presentations and then come back for questions, if that's a suggestion for efficiency, Madam Chair.
Okay, please continue.
Okay, moving on. I can't see which slide you have up there, but following the histograms is the slide that shows TSC limits and catch. This slide takes a closer look at the prohibited species catch limits for halibut, Chinook salmon, herring, and crab. The limits are designed to constrain the catch of these species such that attaining the limits can close the entire fishery or vast areas with higher densities of those species. Because the fleet wants to continue to fish and catch the groundfish quota, the limits provide real incentive for the fleet to avoid the bycatch of prohibited species. Note that the recent catches are well below the limits in most cases. In the next few slides, I'll drill down to the measures to limit the bycatch of salmon and halibut. Next slide, please. Chinook and chum salmon are caught incidentally primarily in the pollock fisheries. An overall limit on the number of Chinook salmon constrains the pollock fishery, which would be shut down for the remainder of the year if the limit was attained. To provide further incentives for the fleet to avoid Chinook salmon at all levels of abundance, a lower limit or performance standard was established by Amendment 110. Both the overall limit and the performance standard are reduced the following year if the index for Western Alaska Chinook salmon falls below 250,000 fish. There are numerous voluntary measures the fleet also used to avoid Chinook and chum salmon, including hotspot closures. There's a picture of some hotspot closures there to avoid salmon that the fleet, most of the fleet has to avoid. And that these are implemented through incentive plan agreements that the co-op sign on to. And the co-op, at the co-op level and the rationalized fisheries, manage the bycatch for all the fleets and provide penalties and other incentives to keep that level as low as possible. Next slide, please. This slide shows you the data on the number of Chinook and chum salmon taken in the Bering Sea. These numbers are very accurate and precise because all the vessels carry 100% to 200% observer coverage. So these salmon are observed on the boats and sampled at a very rigorous scientific way for the genetic composition. The figure on the left also shows the catch of Chinook salmon relative to the overall limit and the performance standard. And you can see the lines there showing how those have zigzagged in the last couple of years as the Chinook salmon runs have dropped in Western Alaska index for the Three Rivers have dropped below 250,000 fish. A portion of the Chinook and salmon bycatch is from coastal Western Alaska, and a small proportion is from the middle and upper Yukon. And just to clarify the questions that I heard, I just wanted to repeat that only 17% of the chum salmon that are taken as bycatch comes from Western Alaska and Yukon River. In other words, very few of the chum salmon taken as bycatch are Alaska bound. The most recent impact analysis, and that takes into account the age of return, as Mr. Vincent Lyon mentioned, and other factors of mortality, indicated that when you compare the bycatch taken to relative run size, bycatch has reduced the aggregate run sizes by less than 2.5% in Western Alaska and less than 1% on the middle and upper Yukon runs. And I could go into more detail here, but Mr. Merrill is providing quite a bit of detail in his slides in his presentation. So I'm going to stop there and ask for the next slide. Switching over to look at halibut, this slide shows the time trend of halibut fishing mortality from different sources. A couple of things to notice in this figure is that catches of halibut have declined since the early 2000s. And if you look closely, you can see that discard mortality is much lower in recent years. The next slide provides more detail on this bycatch. Next slide. This slide shows the prohibited species catch of halibut by area and gear type. On the left is the halibut PSC in the Bering Sea, and halibut PSC in the Gulf of Alaska is on the right. Note that bycatch has been greatly reduced by both trawl and six-gear fisheries operating in both areas. Current halibut bycatch is less than half of what it was in the 1990s. Next slide, please. This slide provides a brief overview of some measures used to minimize halibut bycatch. The fleet works to avoid catching halibut during their operations at sea so as not to reach their fishery-specific PSC limit, which shuts down the fishery. The Amendment 80 trawl sector, the 20 or so Bering Sea bottom trawl catcher processors, account for about 50% of the halibut PSC limit. When a net is hauled aboard these vessels and dumped on deck, the fishermen quickly sort out the halibut so they can be released alive, with measurements and condition data collected by an independent at-sea observer at all times. As an accountability measure, the Amendment 80 sector provides an annual report to the Council on its halibut bycatch performance for the previous year and on its avoidance program for halibut in the coming year. Next slide, please. Halibut has been a vexing problem for groundfish fishery management, starting with the foreign fisheries that were operating in the Bering Sea through 1990. Halibut bycatch limits were placed on foreign and joint venture fisheries, and the limits were carried forward into the management of domestic fisheries operating under fishery management plans. The halibut PSC limits have been adjusted downward several times, with a 21% overall reduction implemented in 2016, and this was 25% for trawl gear and a lower percentage for fixed gear. In the past several years, the Council has been evaluating how to tie halibut bycatch limits in the Bering Sea to the abundance of halibut in that management area. Next slide, please. At its upcoming meeting in December, the Council is scheduled to take final action on a plan amendment to establish abundance-based halibut PSC limits for the Amendment 80 sector. Development of this approach has taken years due to the complexity of the issue and the fact that our two indicators of halibut abundance show different trends. The Eastern Bering Sea Trawl Survey, conducted by the National Fisheries Service, on the top left, provides an index of halibut on the continental shelf. These are mostly smaller fish. The Setline Survey, the bottom figure, conducted by the International Pacific Halibut Commission, surveys areas in deeper waters near the slope and generally catches only larger halibut. Given this data, the Council developed alternatives that would utilize both sets of data to determine an annual halibut PSC limit, such that when both surveys are high, the PSC limit would remain the same or be slightly increased from the status quo. When both surveys are low, the PSC limit would be greatly reduced below the current limit. The resulting PSC amounts resulting differ among the alternatives. And the alternatives are shown on the right, alternative one being status quo, the top set of matrix there shows alternative two, alternative three is the middle, and alternative four is the bottom set. And the trawl survey is the two columns, and the set line survey are the rows on the left. And you just look it up based on where the halibut the status is indicated by these two surveys to determine what the PFC limit would be. And these can be as low under alternative four, for example. If both surveys are low, then the bycatch PFC limit for halibut is reduced by 45%. There is a 500-plus page EIS analysis of these alternatives posted on the Council's agenda. Next slide, please. The Council addresses bycatch issues at pretty much every one of their meetings, and I pulled together a few examples of issues that have been evaluated in the past few years just to provide a sample of the types of bycatch issues that are being addressed by the Council. Bycatch is not one of those one-and-done issues that gets resolved. It's something that takes continuous monitoring and evaluating ways to minimize bycatch. And so I guess my take-home message here is just Council is always working to minimize bycatch. Next slide, please. Mr. Brower suggested that I include some information on how people might participate in the Council process. This slide notes several different ways for people to participate and learn about the Council and the issues being addressed. As I previously noted, all Council meetings are broadcast, and people can provide written comments and testify on any issue. Next slide, please. The Council's homepage has all the critical information on upcoming meetings and hyperlinks to the agenda and schedule for the upcoming meeting, as well as all the various committee and plan team meetings. And if you look at the slide, I've circled the spotlight that talks about, that will take you to the Council's December meeting agenda. And next slide, please, and I'll show you how that looks. So this slide provides more detail on how to provide testimony and written comments. Written comments can be easily submitted using the online portal set up for each agenda item. The insert here shows a segment of the December agenda and the comment portals on which to click to provide written comments. During the meeting, similar portals are posted for the public to sign up for testimony. The agenda also includes the background documents and analyses posted under each agenda item, which allows the public to read and become informed before making comments or providing public testimony. Next slide, please. That concludes my presentation. I'd be happy to answer any questions now, or wait until after Mr. Merrill has given his presentation, or you can email me with your list of questions later, and I'd be happy to answer them. Thanks again for the opportunity to provide you with information on the Council and its bycatch management program. That concludes my testimony, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Witherall. And I'm certain we could have had just a single meeting on your presentation because there's a lot of information in those slides, so really helpful. Let's see if there are any questions. And please, Mr. Witherall, if you feel that Mr. Merrill will be able to address that question, feel free to suggest that, as Commissioner Vincent Lang did, in the interest of time. That way we'll definitely get to his presentation and still hopefully have time for more questions. So let me just go through our list here. Rep Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Initially, one quick question, going back to the idea of what kind of surveys take place, what kind of coverage do we have both in the Gulf and the Bering Sea by the observers? Is it accurate to say that we lack significant coverage in the Gulf portion of the ocean? Is that correct? We do not have full observation in that area.
Yeah, Madam Chair, in the Bering Sea, we have 100% coverage on the entire fishery for the most part, either on many catcher processors. There are two observers. In the Gulf of Alaska, it's a different system, and the coverage for most of the fisheries is about 15%. And Mr. Merrill will be discussing this in his presentation in more detail.
Thank you.
Quick follow-up on. Okay, so if we have, how much of a problem is it if we're trying to assess in the Gulf that we only have 15% observation?
Mr. Chairman, Madam Chair, it's, the way that the observer program is structured in the Gulf is to provide a statistically accurate estimates of catch and bycatch. And so it's a random assignment of observers, and the way that the data are aggregated across specific areas and times and fisheries. And again, Mr. Merrill can provide all the detail you want.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll wait for Mr. Merrill's presentation.
Okay. Representative McCabe. Okay. We're not hearing you, Rep. McCabe. If you do have a question, it might be muted.
Oh, sorry. I didn't hear you calling me.
Oh, no. So, yes, Rep. McCabe, did you have a question at this time?
Oh, I have a ton of questions, mostly because I'm ignorant of a lot of this. But I'm given to understand from talking to a few people that there are two different types of trawls. So that, I think this goes back to slide 8 and the bycatch by gear type. I see that you're trying to juxtapose in there the bycatch from trawlers or draggers versus longliners and pot. And I'm wondering a couple of questions on that. What's the difference in mortality rate with a dragger that has his gear soaking for 4 hours and he's pulling it along with all the intense pressure versus the mortality of a pot boat that pulls a pot and dumps his bycatch back and deck sorts it and dumps it back into the ocean? So I'm given to understand that the pressures inside the trawler's net pretty much ensures 100% mortality of the bycatch, where a pod maybe not so much, or I'm sorry, a pot maybe not so much. So there's less mortality rate in the bycatch. And also, I'm wondering why we didn't, or why this chart, or maybe maybe you have another chart that differentiates between the bottom trawling and the mid-level trawling. So midwater pollock trawls are different in their bycatch than bottom gear, which is a much dirtier trawl, from what I understand. So why don't we see that chart that differentiates those?
Madam Chair, thank you for the question. Two-part question there, and I'll get to those. The first is, with the exception of halibut, all bycatch is considered dead for purposes of accounting against the corvus. With halibut, the catch is assigned a discard mortality rate based on various studies and assumptions. And those discard mortality rates are set by fishery, and the council establishes those every 3 years. There are differences in going to the different types of trawl gear. There are differences in the catch and bycatch of pelagic trawl fisheries and bottom trawl fisheries. Pelagic trawl fisheries targeting trawls for the most part, but pelagic gear, any fishery can be conducted with some pelagic gear, such as rockfish and others. They no doubt have different bycatch composition and bycatch rates, and I just haven't split those out in these figures. Similarly, longline gear and pot gear would have different catch composition, bycatch composition, and discard rates. And I just haven't split those out. This was kind of just a look and to get at, you know, there's lots of accusations about one gear type or another having bycatch, different effects on bycatch. And this is a 10,000 foot view, but certainly could be drilled down more. Thank you for the question.
Thank you. And follow up?
Sure.
And I just got to get to it because, hold on here a minute. So we were talking about the herring in the, I forget which slide it is, maybe 17. So we were talking about the bycatch, and you said when the fishery reaches the bycatch limit that you shut the fishery down. I'm being told that in the case of herring in 2020, that wasn't true. What we did was doubled the limit for the herring in order to keep the herring fishery going, even though we had reached the bycatch limit for the initial bycatch limit. Is that, could that possibly be true, or is that somebody that fed me wrong information or maybe misconstrued what actually happened?
Thank you for the question, Madam Chair. Yes, in herring, the way herring PFC limit works is that herring limit, PFC limit is established at 1% of the estimated projected herring biomass. And so at the level of 1%, and when those limits are attained, it closes a specific area on a seasonal basis in the Bering Sea. And when the data were examined by National Fisheries Service, it was felt that there would be challenges to shutting the fishery down and closing that area to the pollock fishery, as it would exacerbate other bycatch of salmon and other species. And again, that question is better directed at Mr. Merrill. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. I do want to recognize, and apologies that I didn't know it was you online earlier, Representative Cronk has been with us for this meeting. Representative Vance, did you have a question at this time?
None at this time, thank you.
Representative Christ Tompkins, did you have a question at this time?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And I might sort of be touch and go for the remainder of the hearing, depending on connectivity. But Mr. Witherall, I wanted to just get some home in on the basic economic question about the Bering Sea groundfish trawl sector. And how many vessels participate in the Bering Sea groundfish trawl fishery?
Madam Chair, off the top of my head, we have about 20 catcher processors in the bottom trawl fishery, approximately that many catcher processors in the pollock fishery, and approximately 100 catcher vessel bottom trawl vessels.
Okay, and follow up, Madam Chair?
Of course.
If that helps.
It does. I just want to home in on the bottom trawl sector in the Bering Sea, given that that's the sector in question with next month's vote at the council. So just speaking about the Amendment 80 fleet, about 20 vessels. Could you speak to the ownership of those 20 vessels and their port of origin? Where are they home ported?
Mr. Witherall, you are not coming through if you are responding. And it looks like you might be muted.
Madam Chair, I question.
Oh, let me repeat, or Representative Christ Tompkins, I don't think he heard your question. Could you repeat it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, Madam Chair. My question is, I just want to home in on the Bering Sea bottom trawl fleet, given that's the fleet in question with next month's North Pacific Council meeting. So speaking of the Bering Sea bottom trawl fleet, the ground fish trawl fleet, or the Amendment 80 fleet, where are those 20 or so vessels home ported?
My knowledge, they're all home.
Mr. Witherall, it looks like you're muted again.
Okay, sorry about that. I believe that they're all home ported in Seattle.
And thank you. And if a final, Madam Chair, Mr. Witherall, just in terms of the economics of that fleet, the entirety of that fleet being home ported out of Seattle, can you speak to the ownership structure of those 20 vessels? About how many companies own those 20 vessels? Basically, how consolidated is that fleet? And can you speak to where those companies call home?
My knowledge is, I believe there are six or so companies that own those vessels. There are probably some of those vessels that are not imported in Seattle, that they're in Alaska, but I don't know all the details off the top of my head, and I apologize. I can certainly get you that information, or Mr. Merrill can answer it.
Thank you. Yeah, that'd be really helpful. Any further information on that would be appreciated. And I think the reason this information is of interest to me and of interest to Alaskans is, while there is, you know, a biological and ecological question here in terms of habitat and habitat impacts in terms of bycatch, I think it's also an economic question. And, you know, understandably, when people aren't able to fill their freezers or, you know, there aren't runs coming back home, and I realize those are complex biological questions, there's also sort of economic layer and lens in all of this. And when, you know, 99%+ of the GDP of a fishery is not coming to the state to which that fishery is adjacent, you know, that people react to that in a certain way. And it would just be helpful to get clarity and granularity on some of that economic data. I think it's sort of a relevant consideration in making policy.
I'm sure all that information contained in the analysis for the halibut abundance-based management evaluation, but I, like Mr. Vincent Lang said, I'm still working my way through the document.
Sure. Commissioner Vincent Lang has something he'd like to add here.
Yeah. Representative, I think this question is interesting because the ownership of these vessels, although they may be home-ported, a lot of them might be home-ported in Seattle, they pay significant fishery taxes in the state of Alaska as part of landing taxes. And also what we're seeing is that the ownership of these vessels is increasingly becoming Alaska-based with the CDQ organizations in Western Alaska basically buying into these industries. So again, that contributes a lot to the coastal economies of those CDQ-based programs all throughout Western Alaska. So although one can look at it as whether they're home-ported in a certain point, I think you have to look at it as where the benefits of some of that fish taxes and CDQ ownership may be coming back into local communities as an important factor.
Thank you, Commissioner.
And Madam Chair, could I just ask one last question?
Sure.
I think this might be related to the state and the commissioner. I really appreciate those points, and there are a lot of interconnections. It's my understanding that one of the companies in the Bering Sea ground fish trawl fleet actually sued the state of Alaska over the constitutionality of the fishery resource landing tax, alleging it was unconstitutional and seeking to strike down that tax levy. I'm interested in maybe the status of that litigation or what the state's perspective on that trawl company trying to strike down the fishery resource landing tax might be as far as economic benefit to the state.
Well, we believe that the company should be paying fish taxes into the state of Alaska, and we're actively engaged in that, I think, from the point of view. But I'll make sure that get you an update as to where we are in those legal proceedings.
Thank you. I'd be very interested.
Thank you. Okay, we're going to go next to Rep. Vance. Do you have your hand up at this time?
I do. I have a question for Mr. Witherall.
Okay, and I just want to be mindful of our time, and hopefully members would be willing to stay a couple minutes over, and I hope Mr. Merrill is able to stay a couple minutes over potentially as well. So just noticing the time that we're at 11:36, so very important question, so I don't want to cut anyone off, but just wanted to get that out there because it looks like we'll probably run a few minutes over. Representative Vance.
Well, if we have further presentations, I can reserve my questions for another time.
Okay, thank you, Representative Vance. I know Speaker Seuss has a question at this time.
You can send the information if you don't have it, but knowing that when there's a hard cap and the hard cap bycatch is reached, that the fishery gets closed down, what federal fishery sectors have halibut bycatch and which ones actually have a hard cap in the Bering Sea?
Madam Chair, this is David Miller. I'll answer that. I showed one slide with the halibut bycatch limits for deer type, and those limits are allocated by directed fisheries and apportioned out, and so halibut, which are taken in virtually every fishery, only some fisheries are affected. For example, the pod fishery is not affected. The jig fishery is not affected. But other fisheries, the sablefish fishery is not affected. But other fisheries are limited. So all trawl fisheries are limited. The hook and line fisheries for cod are limited by caps.
Okay, I'm looking at this slide, if it's the PSC limits and catch, and I don't see where it's very specific on whether it's bycatch or a hard cap, if I'm looking at the right slide.
Madam Chair, all halibut bycatch limits are a hard cap. It shut down that fishery. Or the rest
so
of the
all
year,
sectors. So you're saying that all fishing gear types in all sectors in the Bering Sea have a hard cap halibut? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, except
so the longline and the pot fishermen have a hard cap on their halibut.
No, all the trawl fisheries do because that. The cap is apportioned by specific trawl fisheries,
right.
And the catcher processor longline specific cod fishery has a cap, a hard cap. The pod fishery, the sablefish fishery, and the jig fishery are exempted from the caps. That helps.
And I'm sorry, did you say the longline was exempt or they have a hard cap?
The sablefish longline fishery is exempt.
But the codfish is not.
The specific cod longline fishery has a cap.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Of course. Representative Story, did you have a question at this time?
Thank you, Chair Tower. My question was mostly a follow-up in that on Rep. McCabe's question about being interested in the different method of trawling and getting our fish quotas. If we could break out the data to show the different fish reductions by the different methods, I would be very interested in that. Thank you.
Mr. Witherall, it sounded like that was something you could do and get back to us.
Some of it may take some data runs. If you would like about all discard, not just halibut, it might take a little bit of data runs, but yes, we could probably get you something either way, whatever you're interested in.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you. I understand that there's still some difficulties with Teams audio, and so I just wanted to remind folks that the Gabel link, I'm told, is not having any issues sound-wise, in case that's helpful. I know then you also have to have the PowerPoint up to follow along. So, unfortunately, our technology is not working perfectly today. Let's go now at this time, and please, Mr. Witherall, if you're able to stay with us, that would be super helpful. Thank you for your very informative presentation. Mr. Merrill, are you available?
Hi, I'm Chair Tarr, and thank you, and thank you to the committee for this opportunity to provide you with some additional information. I'll be walking through my presentation. While I do so, I will try to address a number of the issues that have come up in the presentation thus far, as well as hopefully highlight some of the additional information that I wanted to cover in my presentation. And I can certainly stay after for a few minutes if that is helpful for the committee in providing information. My first slide is just to set up a bit of context. One of the things that I wanted to highlight is the overall importance of fisheries to the state of Alaska. I think many of you are aware of this. These fisheries support over 30,000 jobs, of which roughly 16,000 are within Alaska itself. The slides that I've provided here are drawn from information that was produced from ASME. And overall, in terms of economic value of fisheries in Alaska, it represents roughly $2 billion in ex-vessel or dockside sales and roughly 5.5 billion pounds of fishery product. That represents over half of all of the fishery resources in the United States. I've highlighted here the fact that salmon is an important contributor both economically and in terms of the total amount of harvest that occur off of Alaska, and that is managed by the state of Alaska. The other fisheries are managed in conjunction with the North Pacific Fishery Management Council or through delegated co-management with the state of Alaska, and that's particularly applicable to the crab fisheries in the Bering Sea as well. So we're talking about a considerable amount of the overall revenue within Alaska, overall harvest within Alaska, coming from federal fisheries that are managed through the council process, again, in conjunction with the state of Alaska. Next slide, please. I think Dave has highlighted a few of the issues related to bycatch, and I just wanted to make sure that we are setting this in context as well. These fisheries are important economic cultural drivers throughout the state of Alaska. Bycatch are those fish that cannot enter into commerce. And as Dave mentioned in his presentation, these are due largely to two reasons, economic discards or regulatory discards. Next slide, please. I did want to spend just a little bit of time talking about the nature of economic discards versus regulatory discards. Although my slides do not specifically call out the proportion of bycatch that is regulatory discards versus economic discards, a large proportion of the discards or the bycatch occurs due to regulatory reasons. That can be due to the fact that there are limitations on specific gears that can be used. Many times there are specific markets established for specific fisheries or long-standing gear requirements that have been put in place. Those can require the discard of fish that are captured by other fisheries using other gear types. There can also be specific seasons that are established or other requirements in our complicated federal management system that may require regulatory discards. Economic discards, of course, can occur if fish do not have available markets or there could be poor quality conditions that also affect those fisheries as well. Next slide, please. I do want to highlight a little bit some of the issues that Mr. Witherall had presented, David presented in his presentation as well, concerning the council process and how we receive various perspectives. Certainly, the council process is essential for our management system. We also conduct a number of outreach efforts that are separate from council meetings themselves in order to gather additional information. We undertake tribal consultations, the federal government does, in a government-to-government consultation process. And we certainly have an extensive input into the management system through our rulemaking process. So there are multiple venues for the public to engage with our process, and we are constantly seeking to improve and enhance those levels of engagement. I also want to highlight that there are many different views on balancing bycatch with other legal requirements, and that's something that we strive to ensure we provide multiple opportunities for engagement to make sure that we are gathering those various perspectives. Next slide, please. I do want to highlight, however, one thing that Mr. Witherall described in his presentation, and that is the fact that managing bycatch is done in the context of many other requirements that we have as well. Mr. Witherall had pointed out that we have 10 national standards, and these are requirements that we must meet for any regulatory action that we are seeking to take. And those 10 national standards sometimes are at odds. Sometimes there are differing ways that the balance can be achieved between our efforts to minimize bycatch and bycatch mortality to the extent practicable, while also achieving the optimum yield for each fishery, for example. We have to consider fair and equitable allocation, but we also have to be careful not to discriminate between the residents of different states. This is a provision of the Commerce Clause of the U.S. Constitution. We also have to provide for the sustained participation of communities. All of these 10 national standards are important factors for us to consider as we proceed through our management actions. And so when we are examining bycatch, we are examining it within the context of that regulatory and legal framework. Next slide, please. As we've mentioned several times during this presentation, there are several main types of bycatch. I did want to highlight we have bycatch of groundfish. Everything that isn't halibut, salmon, herring, and shellfish. But we've also spent quite a bit of time at this hearing, and my slides go into greater detail on focusing on three species in particular, and that is halibut, salmon, and crab bycatch. And that those are subject to specific requirements, additional requirements, in recognition of the tremendous importance that these species have from an economic standpoint, from a cultural standpoint, from a recreational standpoint as well. But next slide, please. So this slide provides you with an overview of the amount of groundfish bycatch by gear in federal fisheries off of Alaska for the last year for which we have complete data, 2020. There are a number of fisheries that are still ongoing this year, so I'm not able to provide you with a comprehensive overview from this year. However, I think 2020 data is fairly representative of the amount of bycatch that we see in various fisheries over time. Overall, I think a few things are important to gather from this slide. The vast majority, roughly 90% of all of the harvests that occur off of Alaska in our federal fisheries are undertaken with trawl gear, and the vast majority of all of the harvested groundfish that occurs is retained. There are bycatch of various groundfish species. Again, many of them due to regulatory requirements that require the discards of those fish. The next largest component of our fishery harvests occur by vessels using hook and line gear, long line gear. This includes jig gear and other gears that are using hooks. In particular, there's roughly about 84% of the groundfish that are harvested using this gear type that are retained. And then finally, pot fisheries, which are primarily active in our Pacific cod and our sablefish fisheries, both in the Gulf of Alaska as well as the Bering Sea, and roughly 97% of all of the catch that occurs in those fisheries are retained. Again, this is discards of groundfish fisheries in those various gear components. Next slide, please. There's been a lot of interest at this hearing, as well as you've heard through the council process, to look at ways that we might be able to address or improve the amount of bycatch that can occur in various fisheries off of Alaska. This slide is providing you with a high-level overview of the amount of halibut bycatch that has occurred in fisheries off of Alaska from 2004 through 2021. This includes all areas off of Alaska. The slide shows the amount of halibut bycatch limit, and again, there are bycatch limits for specific components of our groundfish fishery, and those have decreased over time. I do want to highlight that there's been a substantial reduction in the amount of halibut bycatch that has occurred in fisheries off of Alaska, roughly a 70% reduction over the time period from 2004 through 2021. I believe Commissioner Lang, as well as Mr. Witherall, provided you with an overview of some of the reasons for those reductions, but I did want to highlight a few of those. First, there have been a number of efforts to undertake revisions in our management so that we can provide for what we call catch share management, also commonly known as rationalization programs. As the commissioner noted, these programs can provide for an opportunity for additional reductions in the amount of bycatch that occurs in fisheries. We have instituted reductions in the caps, and you can see that from the graph here. We have instituted the implementation of a program called deck sorting, which allows for, under carefully observed conditions, halibut to be returned to the sea as quickly as possible. And those halibut that have a high probability of surviving can be returned, and therefore reduces the overall amount of mortality, the overall amount of dead halibut that are taken in various fisheries. Next slide, please. As a proportion of halibut bycatch represents roughly 13%, although it's likely to be lower in this year, of the amount of total removals or total catch that occurs from all sources from halibut. This slide in particular is showing the amount of bycatch in the context of all fisheries. This also includes Canada as well as the United States. Next slide, please. There was some information request, I think, at this hearing concerning the amount of information that we have about the genetic composition, both of chum salmon as well as Chinook salmon. I wanted to highlight this slide is just providing you with an overview of the broad geographic areas that are used to identify specific genetic composition of Chinook salmon, which we all understand to be a critically important bycatch species that we are trying to minimize to the extent practicable. All of this information that you're seeing here identifies these areas, and we have comprehensively been undertaking genetic reviews of both Chinook salmon and chum salmon since 2011, and I believe that was a question that came up earlier during this hearing. Next slide, please. I did want to provide the committee with a brief overview of Chinook salmon bycatch in the Gulf of Alaska. Just a quick note, I did not provide a similar slide for chum salmon bycatch because those are very low numbers as far as we know, and so therefore we have no indication that that's a substantial issue currently in the Gulf of Alaska. What we do have here in this slide is, again, a slide that provides you with an overview of the total amount of Chinook salmon bycatch that occurs in the Gulf of Alaska. But I also want to highlight an important fact, and this is captured in the pie graph that you can see here, and that is a large proportion of the Chinook salmon bycatch that is occurring off of Alaska are Chinook salmon that are bound for river systems outside of Alaska. I know this has been a concern in the past to this committee, and these trends of information that we have from genetic sampling continue to hold true today. We do undertake our genetic sampling program on an annual basis, and we are constantly revising these numbers as we improve our understanding of genetic information, but overall the trends have been maintained over the years, which is a minority of the amount of Chinook salmon bycatch we see in the Gulf of Alaska is bound for Alaska river systems. Next slide, please. The next slide provides the same information over the same time period for the Bering Sea. And again, I did want to highlight the fact that there are a number of contributors to Chinook salmon bycatch that are outside of Alaska or in Asia. And those are noted here as well as on this graph. Next slide, please. Finally, on this information, I did want to provide, we undertake genetic sampling, as I mentioned earlier, for chum salmon. Next slide, please. And our overall amount of Bering Sea chum salmon bycatch is shown in this slide. I think if you could advance one more slide, please. The overall story here, I think, is an important one, that Chinook salmon bycatch, based on our current understanding, represent about less than 3% of the total returns for Western Alaska rivers. And based on the information that we have right now, it is less than 1% of the returns in Western Alaska. I do also want to highlight, though, that although we understand the percentage of returns is low, bycatch amounts do remain a concern, and this is something, as you've heard at this hearing today, something that we are continuing to make efforts to try and understand better. Next slide, please. Thank you. This slide provides you with an overview of Bristol Bay Red King Crab bycatch. I know that there has been substantial concern about the status of Bristol Bay Red King Crab in particular. Overall, I think it's important to note from this slide that bycatch of Bristol Bay Red King Crab remains a very small proportion of the total amount of crab that are harvested within the fishery. And the second portion of this slide provides you with an overview of the amount of Red King crab that occurs in various fisheries. And I'll note that it can vary from year to year. In some years, cod gear has the highest proportion of bycatch, and in some years, trawl gear has the highest proportion of bycatch as well. Next slide, please. So how do we measure bycatch? I think there were a number of questions about our observer program or our monitoring protocols that we have in place. First, I wanted to begin by noting that we have the largest at-sea monitoring program in the nation. We have over 40,000 observer days of observation. As Mr. Witherall has noted, we have 100% observer coverage on vessels that are engaged in what are called catch-share programs or rationalization programs to make sure that we are very carefully monitoring the amount of bycatch that occurs in those fisheries. All trawl catcher processors are subject to these requirements as well. We have, and these programs, I should note, we have programs that require 100% observer coverage in the Gulf of Alaska. There's a Gulf of Alaska rockfish fishery that is subject to 100% observer coverage. That's a trawl fishery. All trawl catcher processors in the Gulf of Alaska are subject to 100% observer coverage. We also have an extensive electronic monitoring program that is applicable both for pot and hook and line vessels. And we use the information that we've obtained through this EM program to be able to distinguish specific species that are being discarded with a high degree of reliability. That has been a very successful program that I think has addressed a number of concerns that have been raised about having observers on smaller fixed gear vessels. We also have a 100% EM program that is current, or electronic monitoring program that is currently under development for pollock vessels. We are deploying that through what we call an exempted fishing permit, and that is another mechanism for us to ensure that there is not discard occurring of bycatch species at sea, and allows us to have a comprehensive overview of the amount of bycatch that occurs in those fisheries. Again, that's applicable both in the Gulf of Alaska as well as the Bering Sea. We do have a portion of the fishery that is not subject to 100% observer coverage, but we do have protocols in place to provide ourselves with statistically reliable samples, and that is done through an annual review process where we're able to review each of these programs and how we are monitoring the fishery moving on forward. Next slide, please. Just briefly, this slide, I think, highlights a number of the ways that we control bycatch. We have caps, we have limits, we have closure areas, we have gear requirements that are in place. I've mentioned the value of catch share programs or rationalization programs to provide additional opportunities for improvements. We have undertaken dozens of experimental fishing permits with various industry participants. And we are in constant communication with the fleet and do facilitate industry efforts. I think it is important to note that there are extensive improvements in bycatch that can occur as the industry seeks to avoid bycatch. Certainly, bycatch is not something that is desired in any fishery, and the industry undertakes numerous efforts to try and reduce that through voluntary stand downs or other protocols that we help to facilitate as well. Next slide, please. In the future, we will continue to examine all of these issues. We're continuing to improve our communication. As Mr. Witherall admitted in his presentation, there are programs that are currently underway to reevaluate and establish new bycatch limits for halibut in the Bering Sea. We will continue to facilitate and encourage those efforts to the extent we can, and are constantly looking to review them. Performance, provide updated data to the industry overall, and enhance our ability to ensure that we're providing the most reduction that we can within these fisheries. And then my final slide, Madam Chair, just provides some additional contact information, recognizing the limits of time that we have. With that, Madam Chair, that concludes my presentation.
Thank you so much, Mr. Merrill. And in going to questions, I'm just going to jump right into one from Representative Price Tompkins, because he's in transit and still listening in, and hopefully he'll be able to hear this. His question is, what percentage of halibut that are returned to the ocean after deck sorting by the trawl fleet survive? So do we have an understanding of the mortality rate? And then what percentage of halibut survive from long line or fixed gear bycatch?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Representative Price Tompkins. My understanding is that that can vary from year to year.
Oops, we just lost you. I'm sorry, Mr. Merrill, we are not hearing you. I don't know if you accidentally got muted. Mr. Merrill, I think you are muted.
How can you tell?
Well, I can't tell us if we can't hear him. Okay. Okay, Rep. McCabe, let's see if we could hear you. Because, Mr. Merrill, I'm so sorry, we're not hearing you.
Yeah, I'm not hearing him either on Teams out here, Rep. Tarr, so I'm not sure. He just, in the middle of the sentence, kind of went away. It's been, Teams has been like this all morning, frankly, for me, but I'm in Korea, so.
No, I think there have been some audio issues with Teams, and so apologies for that. So Mr. Merrill just dropped off, and I'm hoping maybe he is in the process of trying to reconnect. And so we'll just take a brief at ease and see if he joins us, if that's okay. But Mr. Witherall is still with us, and so let me just ask if any members have any questions for Commissioner Vincent Lang, who is still with us, and for Mr. Witherall. So, Rep. McCabe, I see you had your hand up, and so at least let's proceed with the two presenters that we have, and hopefully we'll be able to get Mr. Merrill looped back in one way or another.
Yeah, that's fine, Rep. Tarr, thanks. My questions are a little bit more sort of generic. I'm hearing different Mr. Witherall could answer this. The Gulf of Alaska, I'm hearing, I heard him say that there were requirements for 100% observer, but I'm hearing from people in the fishery that it's like 15%. So I'm wondering, if we don't have 100% coverage of observers on the trawl fleet, do we stop the fishery, or do we stop a boat from going out if there's no observer for it? So I'm hearing from people that this is more like 15% of the boats have observers on them. So that's a question. And I also have a couple of observations. Slide 9 of Mr. Merrill's slideshow was one of the ones that concerned me. Why isn't there a line on there that depicts the halibut biomass? So if the biomass is declining, then the bycatch would be declining. It seems like there's no baseline, and I'd like to see more the baseline biomass instead of percentages of another example is percentages, you know, this bycatch was 1% of the fish that went up the river. Well, what's the total pounds or what's the total number of fish? I'd like to see the total. I think that the public would like to see the total. They have no idea what percentage goes up the river. They want to know what the total pounds and what the total number of fish are that are caught in the bycatch. Those are just a few of the things. I don't, maybe Commissioner Vincent Lang could answer those, address those.
Thank you, Representative McCabe. And so, Mr. Witherall, let me go to you first, and then Commissioner, if you have something you want to add in. The first question about the coverage for the observers, and then the second question about how the information is being presented and how it reflects sort of the full understanding of the biomass.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As you did, to answer the first question about observer coverage, again, the fisheries in the Bering Sea are 100% to 200% coverage, meaning there is at least one observer on all of those boats. In the Gulf of Alaska, it's a slightly different observer program. And this past year, coverage in the trawl fleet, the trawl sea catcher vessel fleet, was about 25% coverage. It's projected to be about 28% next year. And the catcher processors that fish in the Western Gulf were rockfish, they have, again, 100% coverage, trawl coverage. So the observers collect the data. And if it's not a 100% coverage fleet, that becomes a sample that gets used to statistically increase the data across the entire fishery. And if that, hopefully that helps with that understanding.
So follow up, Reptar, just on that particular one.
Yeah, and Brett McKee, just one second.
I think that we might be getting into a semantics issue with catcher processors and, you know, and catcher boats. And it just seems to me that Mr. Merrill said there was a requirement in some or most fleets or most fisheries in the Gulf of Alaska for 100% coverage. So my question is if they don't have 100% coverage, if they don't have an observer on the catcher boat, not necessarily just the catcher processor, does that boat still get to fish? Does it go without an observer? And I'm just concerned that we are, you know, it's like Mark Twain said, you know, there's lies, there's darned lies, and then there's statistics. And it seems to me that some of the statistics are being left out that are more important or less indicative of the actual what's actually happening out there, or based on information that I'm getting from people that are actually fishing on the grounds. So I'm very concerned that we are not getting the entire picture here.
I believe Mr. Merrill might be online too.
Yeah, I think we have Mr. Merrill back at least on the telephone. So thank you so much for calling back in. I hope you heard the question and if you could respond to that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My apologies. I'm not quite sure what happened there. Let me just briefly kind of summarize a bit of our observer program and how that operates. So why don't I first just sort of note that the portion of the fleet that is subject to what we call full coverage, and those are, again, vessels that are either larger vessels, catcher processor vessels, or vessels that are active and engaged in our catcher rationalization program, that's one category. Those vessels are observed 100% of the time. Then we have a portion of the fleet, some catcher vessels in the trawl fleet that operate in the Gulf of Alaska. And then we have all of our catcher vessels that are operating using top gear, as well as hook and line gear. They are subject to what we call a partial observer coverage program requirement. And in those requirements, there is a need for the vessel operators to log their trips when they're going to go out, and we randomly select specific trips that will be subject to observation based on the proportion of the trips that are available for coverage. And we vary the amount of observer coverage on those three different categories of vessels. We provide higher levels of observer coverage on trawl gear and then slightly less observer coverage requirements on pot and hook and line gear. We have a random deployment mechanism as a way for us to ensure that we're getting a random distribution of the coverage of the various vessels that are going out on trips. There has been concern, I think, about whether or not that random selection process is providing us with a holistic or an accurate view of what's happening out on the water. And one of the things that we undertake on an annual basis is reviewing our process to see whether or not there are indications that that level of sampling is in some way not representative of what we believe is occurring out in the water. We look at a wide variety of different aspects of information, but in particular, one thing that we can and do examine is, are we seeing differential harvesting locations or patterns for vessels that are engaged with observers on board the vessels and for those fisheries where they're not subject to observation? And I know that that has been a concern in the past. We have not seen those levels of concern in terms of the amount of observer coverage that we have within our various fisheries. We are constantly looking at that and making suggestions and modifications so that we avoid a situation where we think that we're getting unreliable or unrepresentative samples from our observer program. But that is a process that we undertake on an annual basis. And then through that process, we can make modifications or improvements in our observer program. I will also note that we have a number of committees that we engage directly with stakeholders in order to better improve and enhance our observer coverage requirements and our monitoring requirements. And I also did want to note that in addition to the at-sea observation process, we also have a fairly extensive electronic monitoring system in place as well that covers, I believe, about 165 vessels in our pot and longline fleet, and I think roughly 85 to 100 vessels in our pollock fleet that are participating in electronic monitoring program.
Follow-up?
Sure.
Yes, sir. So how much of this observer and everything you just talked about involves a captain self-reporting?
So the observations that are made on board the vessel are made by the independent observer. And so the captain's report of catch is not fed in directly into the independent observations that are made on board the vessel.
So through the chair, none of what you talked about was involved the captain self-reporting as part of your 100% observer coverage?
Through the chair, so the captain, let me take this two ways. For the full coverage fleet, the observer is on board the vessel the whole time, and they are sampling on board that vessel. That information goes to our observer program. Similarly, when you are subject to coverage in the partial coverage category. So let's say you are a trawl vessel and you are subject to 28% observer requirement. That means 28% of your trips are chosen at random for observation. If you are on a trip and there is an observer assigned to that trip, that observer is, just like with the full coverage category, responsible for collecting that biological data and then reporting it directly to National Marine Fisheries Service. There isn't a stage where the captain is modifying those data. Those data are going directly from the observer to National Marine Fisheries Service. Does that help address your question?
Yeah, it sort of does through the chair. So what I'm being told is the partial observer coverage is just not working. And this is from people that are fishing in Kodiak. It said coverage for the Kodiak bottom trawl fleet is so low that crew now makes accusations that it's more cost effective for captains to throw the trip by trawling in different areas and in different ways while in an observer is on board than it would be to let the observer actually see how dirty the fishery is and risk being shut down earlier in the season. Does that make sense?
Through the chair, I think we've heard those concerns expressed in the past, and I think that's part of why we have designed our program the way that we have, with an annual review of how our observations are being conducted. I guess we have not seen those indications of that biasing of data is something that we're aware of. It's from all of the information that we have, and we have some fairly extensive sources of information. I guess perhaps I'll just stop there in terms of, you know.
Commissioner Vincent Lang.
Representative McCabe, there's a difference, I think, what you're hearing between the Bering Sea and the Gulf of Alaska. Bering Sea is 100% coverage. It's basically 100% rationalized. The Gulf of Alaska is not rationalized, and as a result, we don't have that same level of observer coverage there. We are contemplating whether we want to dwell in or get down into a issue of trying to rationalize Gulf of Alaska fisheries. It's been attempted several times without success, and we're working with stakeholders right now to figure out whether that's the next step in terms of providing some stability to that fishery in terms of market, as well as the benefits that we've seen in the Bering Sea in terms of bycatch reduction. So it's our hope that over the next several years we'll be able to tackle that issue, rationalize that fishery, and get higher percentage of observer coverage and get some of the benefits of bycatch reduction in the Gulf like we're seeing in the Bering.
Any follow-up, Brett McCabe?
Yeah, thanks, Commissioner. And so I'm interested, now that Mr. Merrill's back online, I'm interested in the sort of data collection or the data depiction on his slides. You may not have been online, Mr. Merrill, when I mentioned that, for instance, on slide 9, I'm wondering where the line is that depicts the halibut biomass. So slide 9 shows that the bycatch has gone down, and it shows the cap of the bycatch, but it doesn't really show how much the biomass has gone down. So it would seem to me that the bycatch as a percentage of biomass would be important data point. And also I mentioned that I'm interested in knowing, I see a bunch of percentages and data depicted in metric tons and all that sort of stuff, but I think that the public would like to know how many fish and how many pounds bycatch, not what percent of the fish that escape up the river, just how many fish and how many pounds.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair, I think Mr. Witherall, first I would say we were trying to provide a quick, short summary of a number of issues related to bycatch, and I think as we've noted, this is a complicated issue, and can certainly provide additional information. I believe Mr. Witherall presented in his slides some indication of the overall trends in halibut biomass over the last 100 years, if I'm not mistaken, and that's information drawn from the International Pacific Halibut Commission. In terms of, you know, the overall amount of bycatch that we're seeing in these fisheries, at least for 2021, we're estimating that there are roughly 18,000 metric tons of bycatch. And I think just doing some quick off the top of my head math, that comes out to be about 4 million pounds of bycatch. Compared to the total amount of removals in the fishery, in other words, the total amount of catches in the fishery, which this year is likely to be around 40 million pounds, that represents about probably for 2021, although we don't yet have final figures, around 10% of the total removals of the fishery in this year. In past years, the proportion of halibut taken in bycatch has been higher than that, and this represents, at least in recent years, relatively low levels of bycatch.
Commissioner Vincent Lang.
Representative McKay, I think the other important consideration with halibut is that, again, I think you heard earlier in this presentation that halibut are small, but are mostly caught as bycatch. And when you turn those into adult equivalents, not all of those halibuts are going to recruit into the commercial fishery, because commercial fisheries minimum size limit is 32 inches right now. And by far and away, most of the harvest in the commercial fishery, over 95%, is composed of female halibut. So any males that are taken as bycatch probably are never going to recruit up into that commercial fishery, or very few, a very low percentage of them are. So just because you're taking that doesn't mean it's going to recruit necessarily back into the adult biomass that's available to the commercial fishery.
Thanks, Commissioner. I appreciate it. And you're now getting into the what's going to be the next area of my focus eventually is high grading. So, but we won't even go there today, I don't think.
Thank you, Representative McCabe. I'm going to next go to Representative Vance.
Thank you, Chair Tarr. And I have two questions, although I have many more, but want to be respectful of time. The first one that I have is a continue on about the observer coverage. And currently there's sector allocation overages evident on the NIMS weekly catch sheet. Some of these overages seem to be reoccurring, as we've seen with stable fish, civic cod, and the trawl sectors. And my question is, has the council addressed mechanisms to curtail these sector overages? It was mentioned that they take note of them, so what's being placed to curtail them? Because the trawl fisheries are having allocation overages with fully rationalized fisheries that have the 100% observer coverage, but these overages have resulted in the preemption of small boat directed fisheries that are seeing a reduction.
I think that might be directed to you, Mr. Merrill, to start.
Sure, Madam Chair. So I will, without getting into specific issues in front of the council at this point in time, perhaps setting in context a little bit about our management system and the variety of different categories that we have. So one of the issues that obviously is very complicated within our fisheries management system is we have certain allocated species, and then other species that are not allocated. We also have, and those can be allocated through rationalization programs or catch share programs. And within that management context, we are always very careful to make sure that those fishery limits are not exceeded because they are specific allocations to specific vessels or cooperatives. Then there are a number of different other fishery categories where there are allocations to the sector overall to a large group, so allocation that's made to trawl vessels that are active in specific areas, for example. And those are provisions that we monitor and track at the larger sector level. We do undertake a series of different management measures as allocation limits that are at the sector levels are approached. And whether those are for vessels that are active in longline fisheries or pot fisheries or trawl fisheries. And that can include the prohibition of the retention of that catch and its inability for it to enter into commerce. I think one of the challenges that we face is that we've got hundreds of different categories that exist. And so on an annual basis, there can be situations where a specific sector allocation is exceeded. We look carefully at what we think the potential biological impact of those exceedances can be. One of the things that we carefully track with all of those is whether or not we see concerns at a species level that a particular amount of harvest, whether it's by one sector or another, is going to result in us exceeding what we call our annual catch limit. That's one issue where we begin to express additional concerns about that. That can result in additional management actions that are being taken on that fishery, as well as other revisions that it can undertake through a regulatory process. And then the other way that we look at this as well is if we feel like a fishery is getting close to approaching an overfishing limit. And that has very substantive management in,
implications where we can close specific sectors, specific areas. We can undertake a wide range of measures to try and restrict the fleet. Overall, within the North Pacific, we haven't reached one of those overfishing levels for at least 10 years now. It is something that very, very rarely occurs, but you are correct that there can be within various sectors throughout a year times when the sector may exceed a specific amount of a harvest. In the case of sablefish, one of the things that we're obviously concerned about is the amount of sablefish that can be taken by trawl gear. We have noted that over the past 4 or 5 years, there have been some very large, what we call recruitment events, or very large amounts of new young sablefish that are being observed in our fishery. And some of those are incidentally caught within the trawl fishery. We believe that there is a strong indication of very successful recruitment, or that there are these large year classes that are coming through the fishery right now. And that can be contributing to part of the concern that we have. Within sablefish as well, we'll also look at if you have an exceedance in one sector, what is the likelihood that we will be reaching our annual catch limit within a fishery for sablefish for this year. I think there has been some exceedance within the trawl sector in the Bering Sea. That's the only exceedance of a sector allocation that I am aware of. Overall, in terms of commercial harvest, I believe there's still roughly around 15 million pounds that is left within the commercial fishery. So it is highly unlikely that we will exceed the annual catch limit for sablefish for this year, but it is something that we continue to track and be concerned about potential issues that may cause specific areas at specific time of year to exceed a limit. I hope that answers your question.
Any follow-up, Representative Vance?
I have a follow-up that leads into another question, which is the overall, could you address the overall need of the halibut abundance-based management action? Because these overages look at how we've managed the fishery overall, and one species is affecting the other, but specifically speak to the purpose and need statement of the halibut abundance based management and the need for that at this time.
Representative Tarr, I assume that I can start, and then if others would like to chime in, they certainly can.
Yes.
Just generally to the, you know, the purpose and need of this action, this is an action that we are taking through the council process under our Magnuson Stevens Act authority. And so specifically what we're trying to accomplish with this action is to better link halibut abundance with the specific bycatch limits that are applicable to one of the sectors that is active in the Bering Sea. And that's, I think you've heard referred to a couple times in this hearing, as the Amendment 8 sector. These are vessels that are primarily engaged in flatfish fishing within the Bering Sea. One of the issues that I think we are hoping to be able to accomplish with abundance-based management, without getting into too much of the policy issues, since the council is still deliberating final action of this in December, is to try and provide bycatch limits that will more closely match the way in which the halibut resource is occurring, or is available, the availability of that resource within the Bering Sea area in particular. This action, if it's undertaken and there are indications that it would result in a lower bycatch limit than the current limit, could result in additional savings. And those additional savings could then be used to provide additional harvest opportunities. One particularly challenging thing about halibut management is it is also done in the context of an international agreement, a convention that we have in place with Canada. And so savings in bycatch in the U.S. are fed into this overall amount of halibut that can be made available and distributed among various U.S. Canada. So the action that we, the council is considering in December to take final action can potentially reduce the bycatch limits that are currently in place, but it does not necessarily result in a specific amount of reallocation to a specific area because it is still managed within this larger international agreement.
Does anyone else, Commissioner Witherall or Commissioner, want to add to that?
Maybe I'll just add something. Overall, we are striving to reduce bycatch. Nobody wants to throw dead fish over that are unutilized. But and certainly we want to try to link our bycatch levels to the amount of biomass out there, like Representative McCabe was getting at earlier. But at the same time, we want to do that carefully so that as we go downwards in time, that we don't necessarily take actions that don't put us into a different position. So, for instance, we shut the fishery down. What kind of necessary impacts is that going to have? And we are the analysis is complex, as I think you've heard a couple people state. We're pouring through that. You know, we're in a deliberative state right now, so we can't talk a lot about what's going to be happening at the council meeting coming up. But clearly there's an interest in reducing bycatch, and clearly there's an interest in linking it to the general levels of abundance out there. And I am pleased, as I'm reading through this analysis, that there are several alternatives that accomplish that. Which one's going to be selected, I'm not sure yet, but clearly I think at the end of the outcome in December, we're going to have something that gives us a reduction in bycatch of halibut, which is what the goal is here moving forward, and that's going to be linked to some level of abundance that's out there.
Any additional follow-up, Representative Vance?
Yes, thank you, Chair Tarr. We've seen that last year and this year there's been an incredible amount of overage of the trawl sector and bycatch, and I'm wondering what is the consequence of this overage and the impact on the fisheries, because we're wanting a healthy fishery overall for all of the fishermen. We're not wanting any sector to suffer economically in any form, but we're wanting to make sure that we're sustaining fisheries for the future. And so what are we looking at? What can you tell me what mechanism is in place when any sector goes over their allocation?
And Mr. Merrill, we could start with you.
Sure, through the chair. I think, so as I had mentioned earlier, there are a variety of different mechanisms that can take in place. We will look at the conservation impact of that potential overage. We will look at what tools we have available in terms of closing specific areas or times of fishing. We will coordinate with fishermen throughout the year to ensure that they are receiving information or aware of potential overages. Some of this can be due to just the way that we are establishing catch limits within a fishery that may not necessarily be linked to biological concerns. So, for example, we, on a fairly regular basis, have concerns where we may exceed the amount of skates that are allocated to fisheries in the Bering Sea. Part of the reason for the fact that that exceedance happens is that it is due to the fact that there is a limited amount of catch limit that is assigned to that fishery. There's not necessarily, as far as we're aware, any conservation concern with us going over that limit, but because there are constraints on what we set that catch limit at, that can show up as an exceedance. That's an exceedance that occurs in primarily our longline fisheries in the Bering Sea as well. There are other different sectors that can be in that situation. And one of the complexities that we have is where we set those annual catch limits may not necessarily, they may be well below where we would begin to have any kind of conservation concern. We may set those catch limits particularly low in order to accommodate harvest for other species. I will note that in the Bering Sea, one of the challenges that we have is there is a limit on the total amount of catch limits that we can establish for all fisheries, and that is set at 2 million metric tons. And within that limit, there are often fisheries where there's a large biomass, but we set low limits because we are trying to provide other harvest opportunities for other commercial fisheries. That can result in an exceedance of specific fisheries in specific years due to that interplay between those regulatory requirements.
So, Commissioner Vincent-Lang?
So I'd like to add something. So when you look at Glenn's presentation here, you've seen that halibut bycatch has been going down. We've made progress in reducing halibut bycatch. What we're talking about at the December meeting is making further progress. When you look at those numbers, yeah, some of it's related to the fact that there's fewer halibut out there that we've been having less bycatch. A lot of it has to do with how we're using the tools that Glenn has put in, that bycatch caps, closure areas, and a variety of other things. What we're talking about doing in December is further reducing bycatch at the lowest levels of halibut abundance out there. So again, it's not that we're routinely exceeding bycatch limits. Basically, what we're doing is we're constantly adjusting the fishery to try to maximize the amount of bycatch reduction we get without necessarily having bycatch of other species become an issue while we're doing that.
Okay. Please, Mr. Witherall. Mr. Witherall, did you have something you wanted to add? You were unmuted and then muted again.
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify that no bycatch limits have been exceeded. Want to make that clear.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Representative Vance, if you don't mind, I'm just going to check in with other members. It's 12:39. There is a 1 o'clock resources meeting happening today, so I think we will need to wrap up by 1 o'clock. I wanted to check and see if Representative Ortiz has any questions.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for organizing the meeting. Very quickly, this actually gets us a little bit away from the bycatch issue. Well, it gets us a lot more from the bycatch issue. Going to that one slide by Mr. Witherall, which talked about the makeup of the North Pacific Committee itself, is it problematic at all? I received a question from a constituent that there is no indigenous representation on that committee, which makes that particular person concerned whether or not the subsistence issue is constantly at the forefront of the North Pacific Fisheries Committee itself without any indigenous representation.
I think, Mr. Witherall, that one's for you.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. To answer that, the appointments for membership are made by the Governor of Alaska and Governor of Washington. If the Governor of Alaska wanted to appoint someone that's Native to be on the council, the Governor could do so. We certainly have had Native members on the council.
Any follow-up, Representative Ortiz?
No, thank you. It was just pointed out by a constituent, and I felt I should at least raise the question. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And Mr. Witherall, while we're on that topic, the federal Magnuson-Stevens Act that created the council, that's where the seats are designated. It's in the federal law.
That's correct.
Okay. So in case we wanted it changed, that would be our avenue for changing that. Okay, so Representative Ortiz, we've covered you. Representative Price Tompkins, I'm going to come back to his question. He had to leave, but I want to ask his question because that's right when we lost you, Mr. Merrill. His question is, what percentage of halibut that are returned to the ocean after death sorting by the trawl fleet survive? So what's the mortality rate? And then what percentage of halibut survive from longline or fixed gear bycatch? And to the extent we have answers for that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think the thumbnail sketch version of that is roughly about 50% of the halibut that are discarded at sea under our deck sorting program that's that's now in place and widely used in much of the fishery survives. For the pot and the longline gears, it can be less than that. I believe there's about a 16% mortality rate that is assumed for the commercial halibut fishery when fish are discarded in that fishery. I think it's around maybe a 10% or so assumed mortality rate for longline vessels that are active in other fisheries. And then for pot gear, I think it's perhaps less than 10%, but I can get specific numbers for the committee and do some more research on that.
Okay, greatly appreciate that. And so Representative Story also had to jump offline for another meeting. So let me just see here. I know Speaker Seuss has some closing comments, but before we wrap up with our questions, then anyone else have another question for any of our presenters today? Okay, I'm hoping that means we've covered everyone's questions and that I didn't accidentally skip over anyone. I wanted to just, I guess what I will say, a couple of my questions were answered before we get into any closing comments. The things that I heard as items that we wanted follow-up about, so Commissioner Vincent Lang, there was a question for you. If you could comment broadly on habitat impacts and habitat damage from trawling as it relates to craft fisheries, and you said you'd get back to us on that. And then, Mr. Witherall, there's the question about ownership of vessels and the landing tax issue, and it sounded like you perhaps had some additional information you might be able to send to us on that. And then, Mr. Merrill, that last question on breaking out the data for the deck sorting program in terms of mortality rates, if you have additional data there. And there was a second point where you said you might be able to break out the data, I think was on the biomass. And so I know you all are probably very busy preparing for the upcoming council meeting, but those were the items that I heard the follow-up. And if you could, you know, get those items to our office, we'll be sure to share them with all of our committee members, and then we can share them in the documents on the Fisheries Committee website so that interested members of the public could see that as well. Representative McCabe, did you have another question?
Yeah, so it just occurred to me, and this actually was a question I meant to ask the commissioner. You know, and I know that you said that the everything's still up in the air and being considered for the December vote, but are any of the alternatives being discussed in the December meeting? Will any of them save any halibut compared to what was caught last year? I think it just lowers the cap a little bit. It doesn't really make a difference or save any halibut. It's frustrating to me, and maybe this is just my closing statement, if that's okay, Reptar. You know, I'm a resource guy. Alaska has abundant resources. We just need to be good stewards of them. We completely closed down Pebble Mine, which didn't kill a single salmon, and yet we're sort of allowing this bycatch waste. And I understand the need for it, and I understand that it would be hard to have a fisheries without it. But I'm concerned that we're not being good stewards of our environment, and we need to get that. So, anyways, sorry about the pontification, but maybe Commissioner Vincent Lange, you have an idea about the saving of the halibut and any of these alternatives.
Yeah, again, Representative McKay, it's our interest to reduce bycatch, and you do that through limits, but hopefully as we reduce limits, we get the fleet operating as we go more and more towards rationalized fisheries to cooperative type management that even stays below the caps, and that's what we're seeing right now. So our goal is to keep moving downwards in these bycatch caps. Now, are they going to set them so low that you end up not having other fisheries occur, or that you move the fleet into other areas that cause other bycatch issues? Those are things we're looking at carefully as we proceed through this analysis. But again, it's our goal to keep reducing the bycatch levels.
So you don't really have an idea of the halibut, if we're going to save any halibut with any of the four proposals coming up in December?
you will, sorry, reductions in bycatch. I guess that depends upon what level of halibut you have out there. So I'll try to get an answer to you on that one. I'm a little perplexed by what the question is, but I'll get back to you and I'll give you a call.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative.
Thanks,
sure. Okay, so that was the last on your questions and closing comments. Really appreciate that, Rep. McCabe. And I know, Speaker Snooze, why don't we just go to you, because I know you have closing comments in case other folks don't. We'll go to you next for closing comments.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. I really appreciate it. And I certainly appreciate this informative presentation. You know, bycatch in all our fisheries is a critical issue for sure. And I look forward and support new and emerging science on what is occurring on our oceans, as well as needed policy action on bycatch. Clearly, bycatch must be continually reevaluated in order for us to be good stewards of our fisheries. I would only caution that the reason Alaska wisely created the Board of Fish process was to separate the legislature from the allocation of our fisheries resource, as is the case with the North Pacific Fishery Management Council. History has proven this model allows the process to focus on science and not politics or sensationalism. There is a scientifically based regulatory process in place, the council, and the state has voices through its designated seat, as well as other Alaskans who serve on the body. I appreciate and share the concerns of commercial fishermen across Alaska, many of whom are my constituents. My district contains small boat operations, medium-sized boat operations, as well as large boat fishing vessels. Having chaired this committee for 6 years, I've got great concerns for our fishing stocks, not least of which are the collapse of the western crab, the chum salmon on the Yukon, as well as the A-ling, Chinook, and halibut stocks. I urge concerned stakeholders to stay tuned to the science and engage with the public process at council meetings, but I would caution not to get ahead of this process that has been and will continue to be addressed, the bycatch, in an aggressive manner. Alaska has a voice at the table through the appointee process, and the process itself has a robust public engagement. As we all know, fishery politics can be terribly divisive, and I would hate to see this committee add to that ahead of the process that's already occurring. So all this being said, Madam Chair, it's pretty clear to me the state's role in making sure that these issues are addressed and that we're able to fully address the bycatch issues as well as other allocative issues is to make sure that our fishing game budget is fully funded so appropriate surveys can be made to ensure there is science behind any regulatory decisions that are made relating to our fisheries and our bycatch. And with that, I want to thank you for the indulgence, Madam Chair, and I certainly appreciate all the testifiers and all the good questions that occurred during this committee meeting. Thank you.
Thank you, Speaker Stoops. Let's see, does Representative Vance have any closing comments?
I want to thank you for holding this committee meeting, Chair Tarr, and getting the insight from the different leaders involved in this, and I hope that they will take into account that this is something that the people have brought forward to us, and that's why we're having the meeting, because it has come from our constituents coming to us saying this must be addressed on a statewide level. And I will have follow-up questions for some of them, and just look forward to an opportunity that the fishermen and stakeholder groups themselves can have public comment, because I think we need to hear their perspective as well. And I'm looking forward to more engagement on this issue.
Thank you, Representative Vance. Representative Ortiz, any closing comments?
Not very much, Madam Chair. I'm a little bit perplexed. I still have some remaining questions, like other members of the committee do, but I certainly appreciate the three members who testified today and the information that they did share with us, and I look forward to an opportunity to re-engage on this particular question as we move forward in the process. And thank you very much for putting this meeting together, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Ortiz. Representative Price-Tompkins, any closing comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm really glad I could rejoin and echo a couple of comments made by other members. First, this issue is incredibly important, as I think everybody spoke to and recognized, and lots of complexity. It was really great to get information on the record and for you, Madam Chair, to provide this forum. I really appreciate Mr. Witherall, Mr. Merrill, and the commissioner testifying. And just speaking from a Southeast Alaska perspective, I think there's maybe not a more unifying issue in this region. I mean, be it tribes, charter fishermen, sports fishermen, commercial fishermen, everybody is concerned about this. I mean, 99 going on 100% of people I know in this region. And so as this December meeting comes up, and as the state of Alaska has a leadership position in that meeting and the vote that is passed by the commissioner or Rachel Baker, there will be a lot of eyes across Alaska on how the state represents its citizens on this issue. And I'm really glad we can get the information out in the month prior so people can start to pay attention and learn more. So thank you again for holding the forum.
Thank you, Representative Price-Tompkins. And I'll just say in the closing moments, because we already have resources committee members showing up, I am glad we made the decision to limit it to these three presenters because we went nearly an hour over. And so I know, again, that as I mentioned at the beginning of the meeting, there's interest, and Representative Vance mentioned it as well, from other stakeholder groups to come and present to the committee, and we will certainly find time for that. And I just want to make it clear for those interested parties, you know, that will be in the near future. We're coming up into the holiday season, and it's been a difficult year because we've been in special session all year, and folks are already needing to prepare for moving back to Juneau again in January. So please stay tuned. We will do that when we can, and we absolutely want to have your feedback and involvement. Thank you to Mr. Witherall for sharing all of the ways that for the upcoming council meeting, which is, you know, basically right after Thanksgiving, that members of the public can participate, send written comments, you know, provide testimony. I hope those are helpful tools for anyone who's interested in this topic. And just thank you to our presenters, Mr. Witherall, to Mr. Merrill, and to Commissioner Vincent Lang. I have 14 pages of notes from today's meeting. So definitely a lot going on in this topic, and it will not be the last meeting we have. Thank you for everyone staying the extra hours so we could complete our work today. And at 12:56 p.m., we will adjourn this Fisheries Committee meeting.